This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. It's the end of the Mueller probe, but not the end of the story. On Friday, Robert Mueller gave the Department of Justice his report on whether the 2016 Trump campaign conspired in any way with Russia or tried to obstruct federal investigations related to this. Yesterday, Attorney General William Barr sent his summary of that report to the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. As to the first question, the special counsel found that the Russians repeatedly tried to hack the election and they repeatedly offered to help the Trump campaign, but he found no evidence of anyone in Mr. Trump's orbit taking part in those plots. The answer to question two is more complex. According to the Attorney General, Mr. Mueller found evidence suggesting obstruction of justice and evidence refuting it. The special counsel could neither accuse nor exonerate the president, which leaves it up to Mr. Barr. In his letter to Congress, Barr wrote that the evidence is not enough to accuse President Trump of obstruction. And with that, it's the end of the Mueller probe. But what now? Where does it all go from here? Joining us from the Washington Post is Shane Harris, who covers intelligence and national security. His books include The Watchers, The Rise of America's Surveillance State. Shane, welcome back to 1A.
Hi, Joshua. Thanks for having me.
Joining us here in studio is James Antle, the editor-in-chief of the American Conservative Magazine. He's also a senior advisor at Defense Priorities. Jim, glad to have you back.
Good to be here.
And also in studio, Morgan Finkelstein is a spokeswoman for the Moscow Project at the Center for American Progress. That project focuses on examining potential collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Morgan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And boy, do we already have plenty of questions and comments. So we'll get to those really quickly. But Shane, before we do, let me just ask you about process, first of all, particularly the process involving Congress getting this letter from the Attorney General. That's kind of basically what we expected from the beginning, right?
That is, Joshua, right. So the special counsel regulations say that once the special counsel has concluded his work, he needs to make a report to the Attorney General that goes over the prosecutions that he brought, the so-called declinations or the ones he decided not to bring. And those are sort of the bare outlines as we understood it. And then the Attorney General is supposed to make a report about that report to Congress. And so what you saw with this letter from the Attorney General yesterday to the Judiciary Committees on Capitol Hill is kind of the first take of that. It's the top line synopsis of what Mueller said, and we anticipate there'll be more coming. But that precisely is where we thought this would be. We weren't sure that we would see it publicly, but we knew that those kind of steps would be followed.
Anything else we should add to the summation of what the report said that I might have left out at the top, or is that kind of the gist of it?
No, that's the gist of it. There's a little bit in the end where he talks about, Barr talks about wanting to release as much as he can. He talks about some of the reasons that some of the information might have to be withheld owing to grand jury secrecy, national security. But the reads that we're getting from the department right now are that it does seem that the Attorney General would like to make as much of this public and give it to Congress as possible. We'll have to wait and see. That could take some days or maybe a couple of weeks. But he does indicate at the end that this is not the final word to Congress on what the Mueller report found.
Before I come to our guests here in studio, Shane, what is our sense of whether we will ever see the full report?
Well, I don't know if we'll see the full as in every single word that Bob Mueller wrote, because there might be some portions that have to be redacted if they're, as I said, covered by grand jury secrecy rules or national – or they're deemed sensitive to national security. Congress, Democrats in Congress absolutely want to see the full report. Both – in fact, the House unanimously voted to release the entire report in a resolution. So I actually think we're going to see a lot more. I mean, time will tell on this, but I by no means think that the four pages we've seen, which do contain significant information, are the sum total of what we're going to see. I think we're going to see a lot more about the details that Robert Mueller unearthed that led him to these conclusions as described.
All right, let me get some reactions now from James and Morgan. James, I wonder what you take from the report, particularly because it's kind of a mixed bag. You know, the question of, you know, the no collusion question, the answer to that seems pretty straightforward. The obstruction part, not so much, but what do you take from it?
Well, I think there are always two competing theories about Robert Mueller's probe based on what limited publicly available evidence we had. One was that the indictments that we were seeing, because they represented what Mueller and his team believed they could walk into a courtroom and prove, that that gave us a pretty good idea of what the evidence was that he had, and that it was significant that there was no indictment of any American for being involved in an election-related conspiracy, that that was significant and that that really told us the direction that things were probably going in. The second theory was that Mueller was sort of methodically building up to some grand reveal on collusion, and that we shouldn't take too much away from the fact that a lot of the indictments concerned process crimes and financial crimes that predated the campaign, that they, by exploring Paul Manafort's financial motives, by looking at Roger Stone's contacts in particular with WikiLeaks, that this was sort of something that was going to be methodically built up to some grand crescendo, and then eventually we were going to see this big reveal in terms of a Trump-Russia conspiracy. It seems, at least based on Barr's summary of the Mueller report, that the first theory was closer to what ended up happening.
Shane, I did want to get back to that obstruction of justice question with you, particularly as it relates to the interview that the president gave to NBC's Lester Holt back in 2017. It's an interview that a lot of people have pointed to in terms of the obstruction of justice question. Here is part of what the president said then.
Regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey, knowing there was no good time to do it. And in fact, when I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election.
That's President Trump speaking to NBC's Lester Holt back in 2017. Shane, a lot of people pointed to this as an example of obstruction of justice. Does this letter from the attorney general, his summation of the Mueller report, prove that it was not?
It does not. It does not address any of the what the report calls a number of actions by the president with regards to possible obstruction in any specificity. It just says that Mueller has a lot of examples, a lot of instances, and for each one of these matters, he made what he Barr describes as a thorough factual investigation and discovered and kind of weighed on the one hand and on the other about whether it rose to the threshold of an obstruction of justice crime. And the letter says that Mueller did not draw a conclusion one way or the other. And so instead, for each of these relevant actions, he sort of lays out the column A, the column B, and describes them, according to Barr, as quote-unquote difficult issues, and then goes on to say, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. And I think a lot of people are very clearly focusing on that piece right now, as to say, okay, so it doesn't clear the president of obstruction. What did Mueller find, and which instances did he look at? Almost certainly he looked at that Lester Holt interview that you just played the clip of. In fact, the letter even says most of the incidents that Mueller looked at have been the subject of public reporting. So I think we sort of know the body of material that Mueller looked at, but we don't yet know the specific conclusions that he reached about each one, or the sort of, you know, on the one hand, on the other, of each of those actions.
Amy emailed, a progressive Democrat here who strongly dislikes and distrusts Trump. I do trust Robert Mueller, and now that this investigation is over, let's move on. I'll be very disappointed if Pelosi and Congress try to keep following this. There's enough he's done wrong, and enough we have to worry about. We'll talk about the politics of the Mueller report a little later on. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from LegalZoom. Business owners can count on LegalZoom for legal advice and no surprises. Over 2 million business owners have trusted LegalZoom for LLCs, S-Corps, and DBAs. They've built a network of independent attorneys available in all 50 states, and LegalZoom provides complete transparency with upfront pricing and customer reviews to bring you peace of mind. More information is available at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
Whether it's athlete protests, the Muslim travel ban, gun violence, school reform, or just the music that's giving you life right now, race is the subtext to so much of the American story. And on Code Switch, we make that subtext text. You can listen to us on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the Mueller report and its aftermath. Morgan, what are the big questions for you that this letter so far has not answered?
I have so many questions that remain. The biggest one is, We know there was an FBI investigation, a counterintelligence investigation, into whether or not Donald Trump was compromised. We don't know the answer to that question, and nothing in this letter, in this summary, even alludes to answering it. We don't know what kind of what his financial relationships meant. We don't know what kind of leverage, financially, personally, or otherwise, that Russia might have on him. And we need to know that as a national security issue. There are so many details that have come out from Mueller's indictments and from other documents that we don't know where those went. Why was George Nader, a Lebanese-American lobbyist, what was he cooperating about? What was the secret meeting in the Seychelles with Eric Prince right before the inauguration about? Why did Kushner try to establish a back channel to the Russians through the embassy? And who directed Roger Stone to coordinate with WikiLeaks? We still don't know much about that, and he's still got to go to trial. We're going to learn a lot more about Roger Stone and all those kind of things. We don't even really know why Michael Flynn was fired. The excuse that the White House gave was for lying to the vice president, but in the things that have come out in Flynn's testimony and other things since then, that doesn't necessarily hold up. So there are a lot more questions than answers than we've received.
Shane, a few more points on the report itself before we keep moving. One listener tweeted, "It was reported that the Mueller report was classified confidential. Is that true? Were any portions held at a higher classification level?" Shane?
I'm not aware of the report itself being wholly classified as confidential. There are portions, however, as we understand it from Barr's letter of the report, that might be covered by grand jury secrecy rules. And he does say that he needs to go through it and review what information might have to be withheld for national security. So it appears there could be classified information and confidential information contained in the report. But I'm not aware that the report in its entirety was confidential. It may have been, but what's effectively happening here is, as you see, I mean, the Attorney General is making a decision to share portions of it with Congress.
And just to be clear, with regards to that grand jury piece, that means that the pieces of information that involve grand juries, the Attorney General would need to interface with the courts that oversaw those grand juries and say, hey, here's this information. I'd like to do something with it. Is that okay?
That's right. He'd have to do that. And as some legal scholars we have been talking to over the past day think it's possible that could happen. It's also important to note for listeners, too, that just because something was said in the grand jury, it may also have been said before that when Mueller's team was investigating that witness or interviewing that witness in the grand jury. So it's possible that there's information they could pull from an FBI or a prosecutor interview that's not covered by those same secrecy rules as in the grand jury.
Shane, the way that the letter is written, Robert Mueller did not decide one way or the other, and therefore it kind of automatically fell to the Attorney General to make the determination. At least that's the way that the AG wrote it in his letter.
Yeah, and even if whether it automatically fell is a question, too. This, for me, is actually the big unanswered question just based on the Barr letter is, number one, why did the special counsel, Robert Mueller, not reach a legal conclusion on this question? Prosecutors, traditionally, that's what they do. They're there to reach legal conclusions on whether there's evidence to bring a charge. Now, of course, the person at issue here, the President of the United States, there is standing guidance from the Justice Department that he cannot be indicted while in office. Did that bear on Mueller's decision? We understand, by the way, from reporting, this was entirely Mueller's decision not to reach a conclusion. So then when he doesn't, why did the Attorney General come in and decide that he would pick it up and do that? And a number of folks I've talked to over the past 24 hours are sort of questioning, how is it that Mueller spent 22 months investigating this question and the Attorney General in roughly 48 hours came to the conclusion that there was not evidence of a crime? Now, he does say along the way there have been conversations between Mueller and DOJ officials about this. So how did that play into it is a question, too. And lastly, did Mueller intend for Congress to take this up? If Mueller approached the question of obstruction, as I think we can presume he did, with it in mind that you can't indict a sitting president, did he feel that maybe his best attack here was to lay out the information and let Congress handle that as a political matter? There's no indication that that happened in the Barr letter. If Barr left that out, he's going to get a lot of criticism for not tipping his hand to that. So maybe that wasn't the case. But that's another big question about Mueller's intentions here.
Speaking of political matters, Jim, let's talk about the politics of this after the report. President Trump spoke with reporters this weekend as he was leaving South Florida for Washington. He spoke on the tarmac at Palm Beach International Airport on his way back to D.C. and commented on the report. Here's part of what the president said.
It's a shame that our country had to go through this. To be honest, it's a shame that your president has had to go through this before I even got elected. It began. And it began illegally. And hopefully somebody's going to look at the other side. This was an illegal takedown that failed.
President Trump speaking from South Florida before returning here to D.C. Jim, is this a political win for the president? And if so, what does this win count for?
Well, it is. Obviously, if the alternative would have been a very big political setback. So certainly this is about as good of an outcome as I think the president could have realistically hoped for, even to the degree to which I think you could reasonably second guess whether the president's full court press against Mueller was a wise idea. And we may, in fact, find out when we look at some of the information on obstruction of justice in the Mueller report. It may be that a lot of the comments that Trump publicly made about the investigation figure heavily in the non-exoneration on obstruction of justice charges. But clearly, I think the president can count this as a win. He can use it to discredit his political opponents. The question then becomes, do Republicans take the win, or do you follow President Trump and a subset of conservatives who are going to want to then raise questions about the origins of this investigation? If they're going to argue that if there wasn't evidence of collusion, then was there sufficient evidence to begin the investigation in the first place? Now, I think politically it would be wiser for Republicans to take this and move on. But the temptation is going to be there. And clearly, in the president's comments, you heard some of that from him.
Morgan, I wonder how you see the politics of it. Let me read one comment from Ben, who emailed, "In these politically polarized times, does the Mueller report really make a difference? With recent polls showing that 87% of Republicans approve of Trump's performance, it's clear that if Mueller's report confirmed collusion, it would only make a marginal difference at the polls." Ben writes, "I still hate Trump for too many reasons to count. A Mueller report that 100% clears Trump wouldn't have changed my vote." Morgan, what about the politics of this?
Yeah, I think the president is very good at claiming victory, both prematurely and in situations where it's maybe not warranted. I mean, you saw Sarah Sanders literally say the president is exonerated when the very small amount of information that we have from the actual Mueller report literally says the opposite. So I think, you know, everyone needs to take a deep breath. There have already been 37 indictments, several guilty pleas. This investigation was certainly worth doing, certainly produced real, tangible results in a very short amount of time. And we don't know what's in the report. There's tons more that can come out. Congress has only just now begun its oversight duties. You know, for 2 years, we had a Congress controlled by Republicans who were not interested in conducting oversight of Trump, whether it was his activities during the election or any of the other policy buckets where they need to do so. So the idea that this is over and is getting swept under the rug is very premature. And when Congress is actually allowed to do its investigations and conduct oversight, I think there's going to be a lot of continuing damning things to come out about the president.
Yeah. And Shane Harris, we should be clear. The president kind of took this as a victory lap, as a total exoneration. That's not true. This letter does not totally exonerate the president.
That's right. No, it doesn't. I mean, on the question of collusion, quote unquote, or conspiracy, I mean, it does say there was not evidence to establish that members of the campaign conspired or coordinated with Russia. I mean, that's a pretty clear statement right there. There may have been a lot of activity that fell below that bar, and of course, Congress will want to know what that was. But on the obstruction point, I mean, it pointedly says, just to literally quote it, "While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him," which I have to say is also very unusual language. Prosecutors generally don't write statements like that. They either bring a charge or they don't. So this not only does not exonerate the president, it raises a lot more questions about how Mueller approached that question of obstruction.
Philip emailed, "After I've heard the first four notes of Beethoven's Fifth, have I heard it all? Should I move on? A letter summary is completely inadequate to know the whole of the Mueller report. We've waited too long and paid too much to allow a cursory dismissal as enough." Contrast that with what David wrote. David emailed, "It's time to move on. The Mueller report revealed exactly what we knew it would. No collusion and not really anything meaningful in terms of obstruction. Most of the report will end up becoming public and, again, the results will be the same. Can we get back to the real issues? Morgan Finkelstein, what about that? What about moving on now that the report is over?
Again, I think there's still a lot more to come out. I think folks have already forgotten the fact that the president's campaign manager, the president's national security advisor, several of his other advisors have gone to jail or are headed there. And what that means for a president of the United States, like what kind of standard do we want to hold our president to if there are crimes and other misdeeds going on in a world that we know is tightly controlled from the top. And so this really tells us a lot about our president. I think if Mueller had decided to drop these 37 indictments all in one day yesterday, that we would have a drastically different national conversation going on right now, just because we've become sort of desensitized to people in the president's inner circle doing extremely major crimes doesn't make them any less important. And again, I think more is going to come out. Congress has an oversight obligation. That's what they're here for. And folks, you know, people can walk and chew gum at the same time as we start to have debates and discussions about where we want this country to go for the 2020 election. We still need to get to the bottom of this national security issue and ensure that we're not vulnerable in the future.
Jim, with regard to moving on, let me play a quick clip of Attorney Alan Dershowitz, who responded to the report on Fox News. Here's what he had to say.
He has to tell the American public, look, I had some people who wanted to indict, some people who didn't want to indict. Here's this argument, here's that argument. I'm leaving it to the Attorney General. Democrats will take one thing out of it. Republicans will take another thing out of it. That's precisely what prosecutors should not do. Shame on Mueller for not having the guts to come to a decision one way or the other. That's what prosecutors are paid to do.
That's Alan Dershowitz speaking on Fox News. Did Robert Mueller make it harder, Jim, for the country to move on from this by kind of punting on the answer punting on the question of obstruction of justice?
Well, it certainly is going to keep the conversation going, and Democrats will face the question, and some of the answer will be based on what the Fuller Mueller report says, but they'll face the question of how much do they want to pursue this obstruction of justice angle, given that Mueller was equivocal in his own verdict on it, and that they didn't find an underlying crime about which there was obstruction. But it reminds me somewhat of some of the criticism James Comey got about his handling of the Hillary Clinton investigation, because the convention normally is if you're going to decline to prosecute, you then don't insert all of these other, well, but there was lots of bad stuff here kind of thing. Comey was criticized for that. I think you will hear some of that criticism of Mueller. Mueller did decline to recommend a prosecution, but did not, but then is going to lay out evidence for why maybe. But again, given that impeachment is really a political judgment and not the same sort of legal standard as is the case with the indictments that we saw in this investigation, there is a case to be made that if Congress wants to take this up, them simply looking at the evidence that Mueller gathered and arriving at their own judgment may be the proper way to handle this.
With regards to moving on, though, Jim, let me stick with you for a second. Hannah tweeted, how is asking Russia on national television to hack his opponent not conspiracy? Can I ask someone to commit a crime on national television, then claim innocence when it happens? Is it so overt, it's covert?
Right. Well, that was a theory that some people had, was that we were seeing collusion in plain sight and that there wasn't really any need to have a deep conspiracy between Russia and the Trump campaign, that there were things that the president and people in his orbit were doing overtly and publicly that in their judgment rose to the level of, if not maybe but to a legal standard, certainly inappropriate cooperation, collusion, however you want to define the term collusion. And that was really, I think, how collusion is defined is another major question that this hinges on. I think for some, it's very clear that Trump and people in his orbit responded to Russian interference in the election in ways that previous candidates might not have. Is that collusion?
Shane, I'd like to get your sense on moving on as well, particularly to Hannah's comment that for many people that makes it harder to just move on because there was such an aroma around this whole election, around this whole investigation with regards to some of the president's comments. We'll get to that in just a moment. And John wrote on our Facebook page, the real investigations are going on in New York State and Congress into his business interests, and there's nothing Trump can do to stop those. We'll get to that in a second. Stay close.
Planet Money tip number 17. Sometimes life is exactly like the movies.
T-minus 30 seconds.
They said T-minus. They said T-minus.
Planet Money, a podcast about the economy and sometimes about rocket ships.
Back now to our conversation with Shane Harris, James Antle, and Morgan Finkelstein. Shane, I'd love to get your sense in terms of the nation being able to move on from this. Maggie emailed, accepting that there was no collusion, it appears that even though Russia reached out many times to the Trump campaign, they did not follow up on any of these offers. Why didn't they report these offers to the FBI? In some ways, it would be better if there was active collusion, because now I'm left thinking this is a gang that just couldn't shoot straight. They appear to be the unwitting stooges of the Russian interference campaign. Shane?
What? I think what that listener and the previous one are getting at is why some people feel like we need to have more about the details of what Robert Mueller found with regards to collusion or conspiracy. Maybe it didn't reach the level of an indictable offense, but what was all of that stuff about? And it's possible that when that Robert Mueller may have found things that we in the press and other investigations have not unearthed, and that when he lays it all out in some kind of a narrative, it could look very damning for the president. I mean, big question is, was this in fact just sort of a shambolic campaign that was inexperienced and they had no idea of the significance of a Russian effort trying to penetrate them and manipulate them? Or were they doing something just shy of conspiracy and kind of knowing to work with the Russians? We simply don't know the answer to that, but presumably the evidence that Robert Mueller found would help Congress and the American public arrive at some kind of conclusion.
Shane, we should also bear in mind there were other impacts of the Mueller probe beyond just this report. You know, 34 people were either indicted or pled guilty to charges. Paul Manafort, Michael Cohen, Michael Flynn, George Papadopoulos. There's been a long list so far. Roger Stone is going through the trial process now that's just started. One listener tweeted, how possible is it that more investigations have been farmed out to other agencies or jurisdictions beyond the ones already known to the public? Therefore, while Mueller may not have recommended additional indictments, there are other indictments that might still happen? Shane?
Well, definitely pieces of the investigation were farmed out or spun off to other jurisdictions, and we know about some of those. There could be others that we don't know about. There will be no more indictments forthcoming from the special counsel's office, and that includes sealed indictments, we're told. But if you want to think about it as sort of the fruits of Bob Mueller's investigation, you know, seeds from that have gone out and sprouted in other places. And so that clearly means the president's not out of legal jeopardy. But we also shouldn't lose sight, too, of something very important that I think that Mueller did in this investigation, particularly in his indictments of the Russian troll farm that engaged in social media manipulation during the election, and the individual GRU alleged hackers who broke into Democratic political organizations and stole emails.
I'm sorry, the GRU, that's Russian military intelligence,
yes,
right?
Yes, thank you, Joshua. Yeah, it's Russian military intelligence, the hackers, really. Those indictments were so-called speaking indictments because they were laid out kind of like narratives or stories, are the most detailed and definitive public accounting that this country has of the Russian interference in the 2016 election, which really nobody disputes did happen. And so that, I think, really is a commendable, frankly, public service that the special counsel did in telling the American public, here's what happened. And I mean, and the level of detail in this is really astonishing. I mean, there is clearly highly classified information that was declassified in order for him to make that indictment public. So that is something that we shouldn't lose sight of either, because, you know, we haven't had a big bipartisan commission like we did after the 9/11 attacks to tell the American people what really happened with Russian interference.
Morgan, I think that today and this weekend with the release of William Barr's report, kind of was the beginning of, I think, a good day for the president, a good day for the administration, his supporters, and a rough day for some newsrooms, some reporters who I think had kind of been primed to report on the smoking gun when it landed. According to the Attorney General, there was no smoking gun, nothing that Robert Mueller could find. So I feel like there's a little bit of reckoning that comes after that for the president being able to now have a little evidence to punch down at the press and say, see, I told everybody that you hated me from the beginning, and now Bob Mueller, prove what I've been telling the American people all along. This is exactly why I said you're the enemy of the people. Now the president has more ammunition for that.
I think the president was probably going to say that regardless of what happened. He's been calling this a witch hunt since the beginning, despite the fact that, again, like Shane said, Robert Mueller provided us concrete and really illuminating evidence of an attack by a hostile foreign power on the integrity of our election system and on the integrity of our elections, period. And so the reporting that the press, the absolutely admirable reporting that the press has been doing over the last 2 years to uncover some of the things that have happened and to uncover who in Trump's orbit was involved, because this report does not say that no one in Trump's orbit did anything wrong. Folks did a lot of things wrong and folks are in jail. And so I don't think that this in any way discredits or undermines that reporting. I think it does maybe undermine the hype around this investigation. You know, this was a very serious national security investigation, and it became very quickly a partisan football. It became a big political talking point. And I think this does bring folks a little bit down to earth on the idea that this was a serious law enforcement procedure.
John wrote on the Facebook page, the real investigations are going on in New York State and Congress into his business interests, and there's nothing Trump can do to stop those. Shane Harris, what about that? The fact that this is not over even from a prosecutorial standpoint. There may yet be more to come. And those other investigations might turn out, theoretically, hypothetically, to be the ones that actually do the most damage to Donald Trump.
It's certainly possible, and we just don't know enough, though, right now about the scope and the nature of those investigations to say with any real clarity or confidence how much of a problem they pose for the president. Look, I don't think any president would want to be under investigation in multiple federal and state jurisdictions, both for things that he may have done in office and things he did possibly before he came into office. But we just don't know in the way that we did, you know, about the Mueller report, what those are really looking at. And just if I can address the previous question, by the way, speaking as a journalist who has spent the last 2 years of his life investigating this question, we didn't presume any outcomes here. And I think a lot of us were even very skeptical that there would ever be a smoking gun found. And when this Barr report was released yesterday, I don't think it came as much as of a surprise. So I think, you know, contrary to what people might think about how people operate in newsrooms, we're not trying to write the script before we hear it. And I think that's one reason why we all remain quite skeptical and cautious on all these other investigations of the president.
Before we wrap up, James Morgan, there are probably still a lot of people out there whose heads are just spinning from all of this. What's the one main thing that each of you would like folks to take away from what has happened thus far, particularly the release of the report to the Attorney General and the Attorney General's summary thereof? Briefly before we go, Morgan?
Again, just to hammer home the fact that over the past 2 years, we have learned so much about the way that President Trump conducts himself and the people he surrounds himself with. 37 indictments, 7 guilty pleas, more to come. 102 contacts between Trump campaign officials and Kremlin-linked figures. This is not the end. A lot of misdeeds have already occurred, and don't give up hope.
And Jim, before we go?
I think that you should never rule out incompetence when malevolence looks like a good explanation for something.
James Antle, the editor-in-chief for the American Conservative Magazine and senior advisor for defense priorities. James, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Morgan Finkelstein, a spokeswoman for the Center for American Progress and its Moscow Project. Morgan, thank you.
Thanks.
And Shane Harris, who covers intelligence and national security for The Washington Post and the author of The Watchers, The Rise of America's Surveillance State. Shane, thanks as always.
Thank you, Joshua.
This conversation was produced by Jonquilin Hill and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.